everybody.
Welcome to AAA Sky. Today, we're discussing the future of the Amateur Astronomers Association with its new president, Alfredo Villegas. I'm MJ.
And I'm Stanley Fertig. AAA Sky is produced by the Amateur Astronomers Association of New York, whose mission is to promote the study of astronomy and to emphasize its cultural and inspirational value. Find out more about the AAA at AAA.org.
First, here's a word from our Executive Vice President of the AAA, Bart Fried.
Hello, I'm Bart Fried, AAA's Executive Vice President, Chairman of the Membership Committee, and Project Manager of our Observatory Working Group. I've also been privileged to be a guest in three previous episodes of AAA Sky, and I encourage anyone interested in being a guest to contact the producers at AAASky.nyc to be considered. The producers are always on the lookout for interesting and knowledgeable astronomers from the New York City environs to discuss all things in New York astronomy, and I can tell you that it is a truly enjoyable experience to interact with them, and more importantly, to share your passion for astronomy with our membership and the public at large. Now, before we get started, I'd like to take a moment to remind all of our members of a great benefit to your membership. Your association is a full complement of telescopes that are free to borrow and use at any time. You can borrow one for 3 months or longer until another member requests it. Again, there's no charge. This gives you the opportunity to learn how to use a telescope without having to invest first in a new telescope that may or may not fit your needs. In other words, it's a try before you buy program, and we have a wide range of telescope types that you can try. Now, couple this with the fact that you can bring them to one of our many observing events and get free hands-on help and advice. Of course, this program is just one of the many benefits of being a member of AAA. Please visit our excellent website at AAA.org to check out the Loaner program and all the other things your membership offers you. And now, on to the podcast. Enjoy.
Our newest AAA president, Alfredo Villegas, has been a board member of the AAA and has had a lifelong interest in astronomy. Alfredo works in finance by day and captures photons on his astronomy camera sensors at night. He has taught several AAA courses, including urban astrophotography, and writes technical articles for our eyepiece magazine. Welcome to AAA Sky, Alfredo. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much, Blake. Great to be here.
Oh, thank you so much for this interview. I'm so excited. I was curious about the process. Since you are now the new president, what made you want to become president, and what has your history with AAA been?
Well, I think I was kind of drafted a bit. I was the chair of the board, and as you know, Brian, who had been president for 3 years, was stepping down because he was actually going to Portugal, which is actually where I was born. And so we needed someone to fill the spot, and no one was raising their hand. And I had kind of backstopped it by saying that if no one else were to volunteer, that I would step into the role. So I kind of, you know, put my foot where my mouth was and kind of got.
Oh, how are you feeling about your decision now?
You know, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I think, you know, I'm really excited about the idea that in 2027, the club's going to turn 100, right? So there's a lot to do to get us ready for that. And so I think the next 3 years are going to be really important to prep for that and to, you know, hopefully have a really significant 100th birthday with a lot that we can achieve, you know, for the club and for the city and for the community.
Can you talk about your plans for this club and what you want to see from AAA?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the AAA has always had kind of at its core, you know, kind of like community engagement, right? And kind of, you know, promoting astronomy awareness. I mean, everybody in the club is It's obviously, you know, somebody who has a passion about astronomy, about the sky, and, you know, which obviously being in New York City is a challenge. But, you know, obviously that's always been kind of at the core. And everybody likes to share that enthusiasm. You can see that when we're up, you know, on the High Line or at Carl Schurz Park or at Floyd Bennett Field, you know, kind of showing passerbys, you know, the planets or the sun, the moon, you know, kind of the objects that we can normally see from, you know, our heavy light pollution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that kind of viral kind of excitement and enthusiasm is kind of something that most people in the club kind of want to engender and pass along. And I would say one of the big existential challenges for a club like ours, right, is that if you look at the demographics of our club, right, I would dare say the average age is probably in their 60s. And so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we don't want the club to kind of go down the road of like, you know, Amish, you know, basket weaving or, you know, like buggies or something, right? We definitely want to get younger people involved. And it's challenging, right? Because we're competing with the internet and Google, and, you know, if someone wants to see a picture, you know, a Hubble picture, an astronomy picture of the day, it's easy. You can just type it into your browser, right? So, you know, kind of getting people excited about actually thinking about, you know, what's out there and you know, kind of our place in the universe and just kind of being at one with nature and kind of that kind of feeling that we all get, that primal feeling of kind of being out in the open at night. That's something that's obviously a challenge to do, A, from the city, and B, because of technology has made it much easier to bypass that. So to the degree that we can get in and engage with kids early on, I think that's got to be one of my biggest objectives for the next few years, is to make sure that we continue that program, those programs, and get more involved in community activity and get more younger people as members.
I absolutely encourage that. I happen to be a younger member. I did notice the demographics that you were talking about when I've gone to a few parties, but I'll be honest with you, it makes it, for me, it's fun. I love being able to talk to seasoned amateur astronomers and to really hear about their experience and their experience in the club. There is an interest, I can tell you just from speaking to my friends, that younger generations are interested in astronomy, but what will bring them to the AAA definitely is a great question. And I'm glad that you're thinking about this, because I think it's a great idea. I was curious for yourself, like, can you tell us about collaborations and partnerships that the association has formed with other organizations or any plans in the future?
So, you know, our longest standing partnership has been with the American Museum of Natural History. And that's actually a partnership that we need to resurrect. We've had, you know, COVID came in and we've had some changes in leadership that have kind of interrupted that. So we need to reestablish that. You know, we used to do a lot of stuff at the museum. We used to have, you know, telescope, you know, mirror grinding there. We used to do our lectures there. So I'm hoping that in the next couple of years, we will reestablish that really important relationship and have a lot more on-site activities. But in the meanwhile, we've also brought into other organizations, like we do stuff on the Intrepid, as you may know. We've striked a pretty good partnership with Pioneer Works. Which is in Brooklyn, and we're helping them with their kind of astronomy program. And obviously, we continue to do the big sort of public things like Starfest in Central Park. We do a Starfest in Brooklyn at Evergreen. I'm hoping that we'll bring back the one we used to do at Woodlawn in the Bronx. So those kind of signature events where we can kind of attract the most number of people and kind of showcase what we do. And then, you know, all the other smaller stuff that we're doing, you know, going to public schools, you know, showing kids, you know, the planets and that kind of thing. That's going to be kind of like the bread and butter. And I would say the other thing, too, is that we do have kind of a telescope loaner program. So one of the other things, too, is to try to get those telescopes into the hands of members so that they can also engage and go out into the community and do a lot more sidewalk astronomy.
That's a great idea. I've heard about the telescope program. It does seem a little intimidating, right? Though these telescopes are extremely fragile instruments, and they're usually older, if I'm correct, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the funny thing about a telescope, right, is basic piece of glass in either, you know, metal or plastic, right? Right. So they actually are pretty, they're pretty sturdy and kind of robust. It's pretty hard, you know, obviously you drop them, but apart from that, they last a long time. So
Okay. We're
not worried about getting those out. And I mean, it's better that they get used and then sit in storage, right?
Okay.
That's one of the key things which we want to try to get there. I think we've also gotten a lot of requests from members to do some more basic classes. You know, classes has been one of the big draws to the club. And unlike other clubs, I mean, the AAA is the biggest astronomy club in the country, right? But it's still relatively small relative to our population size in New York City, right? I mean, we've hovered around 600 members. One of my other goals these next few years is to get that back closer to 1,000 members. You know, which I don't think is that big a challenge, just given, you know, obviously New York City. And that really means that we have to do more, you know, sort of community outreach. We have to do more observing, because that's where we get, you know, the members is from people walking by. And I'm sure that you probably remember the first time you looked through a telescope. You know, most young people can remember, like, when they first look through and they see Jupiter and they see the Galilean moons or they see the rings of Saturn. And it just pops out and they're like, oh my God, you know, it looks just like a picture, right? It looks almost like a cartoon sometimes, right? And I think those kind of seminal events, they kind of get burned into your consciousness, right? And I think that's kind of what we need to do in order to get more people involved and to continue to promote, you know, astronomy.
I completely agree with that. That's actually how I got involved with the AAA last year for my first year. A member came to our building and showed us the moon. You know, that's what we can see that night. And it was really impactful and amazing. And I thought to myself, gosh, there's a whole association. I can't wait to get involved. What I'm really excited about, and this was all the buzz at the last meeting, they were talking about the public observatory that we're building in the Bronx. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I mean, you know, Bart Fried, our executive VP, is really been leading the charge on this. And, you know, we were fortunate enough to receive as a donation an actual functioning observatory, a small little observatory, 3 meters, I believe, in size.
Wow.
And we also had a donor donate a Celestron 11-inch telescope. So, you know, it was basically, you know, in our hands to put those pieces together, right? And, you know, obviously there's a lot of places in New York City. The one that comes most to mind is Central Park. But, you know, the bureaucracy in New York, you can imagine, like any large city, can be pretty difficult to deal with. And so we were fortunate enough to kind of hook in with a couple of great community boards in the Bronx who really were interested in helping us. It's going to be right across the street from the Bronx High School of Science, another institution that obviously has a lot of people interested in astronomy. And, you know, those two groups, you know, really helped us with the city and with the Parks Department to kind of put it together. So we've been working on it for the last 18 months. We've got it just about like on the 1 yard line. It's at the Parks Department. We're waiting for a final sign off from Parks, which we hope will be in the next two to six weeks. Once we get that, then we'll be able to break ground and we should hopefully have a functioning observatory. We're hoping, knock on wood, by the end of the fall.
Oh my God, wow, that's really quick. I think this is really exciting and will also help with getting new members as well. Gosh, I can't wait to see it. I can't wait to experience it in person. Are there any particular celestial events or phenomena that amateur astronomers can look forward to in the upcoming months? Do you know?
Well, the big one that's coming up in August, obviously, is the late July, early August, is the Perseid meteor shower, right? Which is annual. You know, it's actually the meteor shower that usually has the most visible, you know, and the highest number of meteors that we can see with the naked eye. That Unfortunately, it does require you to probably be in a darker area of the city, at least maybe Coney Island or something like that, to really get a view. I think Mars was in the Beehive Cluster, and it's still kind of transiting out of that. But again, that's also kind of something you probably need to be a little bit, a little slightly darker skies. But again, you could still do that from Staten Island or maybe, you know, Battery Park, places where, you know, light pollution, if it's there, you'll still have a good horizon to be able to see. You know, the summer is probably for astronomy the worst season in a way. Like, I mean, A, you've got, you know, mosquitoes and stuff like that. And B, you've got just a lot less time of night, right? I mean, the sun doesn't really set until, you know, 7 p.m. And usually it's light until 8:30. You know, it's really in the fall and the winter when it really tends to be better for us, at least, you know, as astronomers to get out, because usually you can go out at 6 or 7 p.m., even if it's a little chillier, and get a much longer night, you know, session.
Absolutely. I'm curious. My friend was mentioning Manhattan Henge. That's something here that's unique in Manhattan. Have you observed that? Is it as beautiful as they say?
That just happened. I think there's another one that's coming up. I think it happens like twice around the summer solstice. Nice. You know, usually people go to like 42nd Street. I think there's also maybe 72nd Street where you can do it. And sometimes I think some of the best pictures people take is from like Gateway National Park, Gateway Park, which is on Long Island City. Because you can basically aim your camera straight down 42nd Street and kind of capture that.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. All right. I can't wait to see it. If you could witness one astronomical event that has already occurred in history, which one would you choose and why?
Oh, man. It's, well, I think you know, having like supernova events like we had back at the Great Supernova in the Crab Nebula, which was in the 12th century. You know, I think the real big one that's out there as a possibility is obviously the supergiant star Betelgeuse in the constellation Orion, right? That's if you can imagine Orion in your eye and see the three belt stars, and you go up to the upper left, a kind of Orion's shoulder, you'll have like a nice orange colored star that's Betelgeuse. And it's a supergiant in the last gasps of life. It's probably going to go supernova in some time. It might have already happened, but it's like 800 light years away, so it would take 800 years for the light to come here. But in our lifetime, it could happen. But in the next, you know, few thousand years, and if it were to go supernova, it would become, you know, potentially as bright as the full moon. It wouldn't pose any threat to life on Earth or anything because it's so far away. But that would be an event like that would really, you know, get people galvanized for astronomy. You know, astronomy as a hobby is obviously been challenged, right? Because it's not just technology, it's also the age group. And it's also the fact that there hasn't been a huge amount of events that have galvanized people. If you go back, I mean, in the 1960s, we had the space program, you know, the Apollo moon landings, and that really got people into astronomy. And that really started like the golden age of like amateur astronomy. And then in 1986, we had Halley's Comet, which really got people into astronomy. I think we have in our area here, you know, in 2024, we have the possibility of a full eclipse that'll come through New York State. Up, you know, it'll kind of go up through like Rochester and Plattsburgh, New York. So it'll be visible from New York City. It'll be about 90% eclipse. But if you go a few hours north, you might be able to get in the line of totality. So that I think could be pretty interesting. And I'll make a little plug for one of the class sessions that we have coming up. We have a series of classes coming up in July that is all about eclipses. And the reason we're doing those classes in July is because there's actually two eclipses coming up in the next 9 months. There's the full eclipse on April 8th of 2024, the one that will come through New York. It basically starts in Texas, and it kind of makes an arc from Texas through, you know, Kentucky, Ohio, Pennsylvania, all the way up through New York and Vermont. And that's going to be spectacular. You know, we could have up to 3.5-4 minutes of totality. Downside for us, sometimes it's cloudy. So, you know, a lot of people might go to Texas, but, you know, it's not probably might be worth our while to actually go upstate and see it. And then in October of this year, we have an annular eclipse that will be in the American Southwest. It'll be in basically Utah, like New Mexico. And an annular eclipse is basically when the moon is slightly closer to the Earth, and so therefore it doesn't completely obstruct the sun. And so you get what's called a ring of fire, which is basically like, you know, from Tolkien, if you think about, you know, the One Ring, right? You kind of get that golden ring around the sun. So it's not exactly a full eclipse, but it'll be pretty spectacular to watch. And so I think what we're doing for the club is we're putting together a series of, I think, 4 or 5 classes where we're going to talk about eclipses, everything you want to know about eclipses, to get the membership sort of stoked about potentially participating, getting out there and seeing the eclipse.
I think that's a great idea. Eclipses is something that brings the world together. So, oh gosh, that's so exciting. I think we would be really excited to see that, especially having possibly our own observatory coming up. So our last question that we like to ask here for AAA, we ask every guest is, what is your favorite place to visit in New York? And this could be non-astronomy related, just your favorite place.
Well, you know, I've lived in Manhattan for a long time. And I lived downtown Manhattan, and I always loved, you know, like Battery Park City, and, you know, sort of like the pier down there, and just the being so close to the water, you know, the Statue of Liberty. You know, as an astronomer, it's a great place to go because you've got a really clear horizon to the southwest, which is really, really nicely set up for seeing the planets. And I know that some of our expert photographers, like Stan Honda, have taken some amazing pictures of, like, you know, the moon or the planets right next to the Statue of Liberty, which has been, I think one of those actually was an astronomy picture of the day. So that's a great place to go. It's very kind of like laid back and kind of like relaxing. You got kind of the smell of the ocean. You got, you know, kind of the city right behind you and the kind of the majesty of the harbor. That's kind of a place that I've always loved to go to and just kind of like hang out.
Oh, that's great. You know, thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you so much for this interview. After talking to you, I feel really excited about the future of AAA and really excited for you. And so, yeah, thank you so much.
It was great talking to you.
Well, MJ, Alfredo laid out a pretty ambitious plan. Obviously, we're all enthusiastically awaiting the arrival of our new public observatory in the Bronx. And now we have a date on that. He said late fall.
This is really exciting. I can't wait. I didn't even know this was happening. So I'm really glad that he was able to talk about this. What a wonderful interview. I'm very excited about what he has planned for the club. I think this is going to be a very exciting venture. What do you think?
I sure hope so. Another thing that he mentioned, which I want to emphasize, was our library telescope lending program, which is fairly new. I thought I'd just mention that we have an entire episode devoted to that subject and to its creator, Yui Hasegawa, who organized this library loaner program with the New York Public Library while she was just a 17-year-old high school student in New York. It's really an amazing tale, so you should listen to that episode on AAA Sky.
Oh, I have to. I didn't know that. That's really incredible. You know, teenagers impress me. What they can do, what they come up with, young people are just incredible. I think what Alfredo was talking about with wanting to add younger members is very exciting. I think it's going to add a different layer to the AAA that hasn't been there before. And, you know, I've been thinking about how we're going to incorporate younger members. And something I was thinking about was something that Kat did. When she told me about the Astronomy on Tap event. I ended up going, and I have to say I was really surprised. The demographics there were young people, just, you know, ready to have, you know, beer and drinks on tap. And the vibe there was really relaxed, cool, and just amongst friends. You definitely felt like you were amongst friends there. So I think perhaps the AAA could possibly work with Astronomy on Tap.
And we do.
You do? Okay, tell me about it.
I mean, no, just that many of the speakers or some are AAA people. So
that is true. So, I mean, how do we get the Astronomy on Tap people to, you know, to the AAA?
There again, we do. We just interviewed Brian Levine earlier in this season, and he's one of the principal people of it. And in the past, we've also interviewed other people that helped set up Astronomy on Tap. So no, we're pretty tight with Astronomy on Tap. One other thing that he talked about being tight with other organizations was the American Museum of Natural History. And I don't think most people know this. I actually think very few people know this, but he mentioned that he wanted to do more in concert with the museum going forward. And that's kind of a full circle, because when the AAA was born in 1927, it was created by the American Museum of Natural History. What happened was they created, as a subset of, I guess, the geology and mineralogy division, they created a subdivision called astronomy, and that subdivision created an astronomy club, with the president of that club being a museum employee and PhD, Dr. Clyde Fisher, I think. Anyway, so it was the museum that created the AAA, and that astronomy subdivision very soon after that led to the founding of the Hayden Planetarium, a.k.a. the Rose Planetarium. So the club was part of the AMNH until the two gradually over decades went their separate ways. So a renewed collaboration with them would be a kind of homecoming.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's amazing. I think, yeah, it would be a homecoming. And I'm excited to see what events they could possibly do in collaboration with us, you know, moving forward.
I mean, when it first started, the Astronomy Club was doing public observation for the museum. So yeah, it's a full circle. We can certainly do that. One of the other things he mentioned was preparing for the big eclipse in April of 2024.
Very exciting. I feel like eclipses bring everybody together. It gets national interest. Have you noticed?
Absolutely. I went in 2017 when we had the Great American Eclipse or whatever it was called. I went out to Oregon because I assumed that since Eastern Oregon is dry, there'd be less chance of clouds. I was right. One thing he mentioned, which is worth repeating, is before I went out there to do my eclipse photography, which I had never done in my life before, let alone photograph the sun even when it's not eclipsed, we had a class given by Stan Honda on how to photograph the sun with and without a moon in front of it. And it was so helpful. I mean, there was just so many useful tips that Stan gave us and understood how to do this correctly. So anybody who is interested in watching or photographing the eclipse, I highly recommend taking one of our classes on it this year to prepare for it. They are worth their weight in gold.
Do you have to bring special equipment for that?
Well, it depends what you want to do. You need eclipse glasses. If you're going to look at it, you need, you know, eclipse glasses to protect your eyes. And short of that, then a piece of Mylar, which is easy to get, which actually Stan Honda handed out as part of the class, to put that over your camera lens. But I'd say the most important advice that Stan gave in this class, and I don't want to spoil his next class or anything, but I think I can do this, is like, if you decide you want to photograph the eclipse, since it only lasts 3 or 4 minutes of totality, the whole process takes hours, you know, where the sun gradually gets eaten and then gradually it comes back to life. But totality is only 3 or 4 minutes at best. And the advice he gave is, if you're out to photograph this, as I was, don't forget to look at the eclipse. Don't forget to look at the thoroughly eclipsed sun, because it's a once-in-a-lifetime or a few-times-in-a-lifetime event. It's almost a religious experience. And if you've got, if you're fussing with your equipment and looking at the camera and all of that, you miss it. And that would be a shame. So that's why it's, the bottom line is, if you take the class and you'll be prepared and you won't have to fuss with your equipment, and you'll be better equipped to what to look for and how to look. And in any case, eclipses are beyond extraordinary when you see them. And if you think about it, you know, going back to the Middle Ages and things, I'm thinking about, you know, Mark Twain, a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. If you or any of our listeners had the chance to read it, it's a great book. But at one point, he knows in advance because he's modern.
I actually know what you're talking about, because I think Neil deGrasse Tyson talked about it once. With how astronomers used what they knew about astronomy to impress the people, even the Middle Ages and back in the day, because people didn't know what was going to happen. So they thought, wow, this is a god speaking? Like, how did he or she know? So it's incredible.
I like that. Astronomers are God.
Yes, yes. If you don't know better, yes, we're gods. And now it's time for Looking Up, where we tell you about upcoming astronomy and AAA events around and in New York. On Saturday, July 8th, it's Tanabata. We will be celebrating this Japanese festival with our telescopes in conjunction with the Japanese consulate at Carl Schurz Park on East 86th Street from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Grab your kimono and come see the sky and find out about the legends of the star-crossed lovers, Alatar and Vega.
On Sunday afternoon, July 9th, from 1 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock, we'll have our solar telescopes out at Pioneer Works in Brooklyn. Come see the sunspots and prominences safely with the AAA. On Tuesday the 11th, we'll be doing public observing at the High Line beginning at 8 p.m. And on Friday the 14th, we'll have observing at the Hearst Plaza of Lincoln Center, also beginning at 8 p.m.
On Saturday the 15th, it's a new moon, which means we make a pilgrimage to the North-South Lake in the Catskills for dark sky observing. This is a members-only event, so if you're interested in coming, join us. We typically do ride sharing, so email our AAA universe on groups.io to find or offer a ride.
For those of you who choose to stay in the city on the 15th, it's the 14th annual St. Albans Under the Stars Star Watch at St. Albans Park in Queens from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. This is an annual event sponsored by New York University and City Councilwoman Natasha Williams. We'll have our solar telescopes out during daylight and our other telescopes out after dark.
On Tuesday the 18th, we'll be at the High Line with our scopes from 8 p.m. onward. And for those of you from Staten Island, we will be observing from 8 p.m. on the night of Saturday, July 22nd at Great Kills Park on Staten Island.
We have a solar observing event at Pier I on Sunday afternoon the 23rd. View the sun safely with us through solar filter telescopes. Remember, never look at the sun without proper protection for your eyes.
Absolutely. On Tuesday, the 25th, we'll be back at the High Line with our scopes from 8 p.m. onward. Finally, on Friday, the 28th, we will have two public stargazing events at Lincoln Center Hearst Plaza from 8 p.m. on, and also from 9 at Floyd Bennett Field at Gateway National Park in Brooklyn.
Go Brooklyn.
Woo!
You can find more information and updates on all of these events, as well as directions to these sites, on our website.
That is our show. Tune in next time, where we will continue to bring you the latest in astronomy-related topics. Until then, stop by theAAA.org to learn more about the AAA and how you could become a part of it.
AAA Sky is a production of the Amateur Astronomers Association of New York. Audio editing and original music are by Preston Staley. Our technical producer is Parker Bussier.